You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, here I am. This day in history once again takes us back. Well, not once again takes us back, but you know what I mean. I really messed that up. Takes us back to 1986 and the beginning of the People Power Revolution in the Philippines. 3 days of protests led to the ousting of the US-backed President Ferdinand Marcos, who first came to power in 1965.
President Johnson is glad to agree. He will be pleased to join the meeting of other chiefs of state or government who are participating in the Vietnamese effort.
From the White House, Presidential Press Secretary Bill Moyers announces U.S. participation in a seven-nation summit conference on Vietnam, which will take chiefs of state to Manila. This beautiful city in the Philippines will play host to America's Asian allies. This nation, along with South Vietnam, South Korea, Thailand, Australia, and New Zealand, all have troops fighting beside U.S. soldiers against the Viet Cong. President Marcos, who proposed the meeting, officiates at ceremonies which send the advance units of an eventual 2,000-man force to Vietnam. Most of the officers are veterans of the Korean War. These troops fill engineering, security, health, and other non-combatant roles. Thus, the seven-nation Manila Conference will be of vital concern, not only to the more than 1 million men under arms in Vietnam, but to an entire world anxious for peace with honor. On a rainy day in Washington, pomp and ceremony attend the formal reception of Philippine President Ferdinand E. Marcos. President and Mrs. Johnson give a warm welcome to the Philippine leader and his wife. President Marcos begins his state visit with high praise for President Johnson's firm stand in Asia. New York is also an important stop in the two-week visit of President Marcos. He arrives by helicopter, landing on the roof of one of Manhattan's skyscrapers. The touring chief executive is greeted by top state officials. His country supports U.S. action in Vietnam with 2,000 troops, mostly engineers.
Americans call the aircraft the Flying White House. It touched down on schedule in the Philippines, bringing the president, accompanied by his wife, to attend the Seven-Nation Conference on Vietnam. President and Mrs. Marcos received him. The people of Manila were honored that their city was chosen for the meeting of nations directly engaged in the Vietnam War. On the way to the Philippines, the president had stopped in Samoa to be welcomed in the picturesque way of the South Pacific. Lyndon Johnson has a way of making friends everywhere. Wellington, capital of New Zealand, left nobody in doubt of that. Technically, he was a foreigner there. They greeted him as if he were a New Zealand hero and invited him to see some expert sheep shearing. Australia, no less than New Zealand, wholeheartedly goes all the way with LBJ on the question of Vietnam. Sydney's welcome almost made him think he was in New York. No more than in the president's own country does democratic Australia wish all her people to think alike. Hence the active anti-war faction is allowed, but not permitted to demonstrate against a highly distinguished visitor from the United States. Long hair, sometimes a disadvantage. Everybody who visits Sydney wants to see the world's finest harbour. The president much admired the striking opera house when he saw the great city from the water. The march of events and the logic of geography have brought Australia into political harmony with the United States.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, Sarah. Hey, how do you know if someone's a vegan? They'll tell you.
Amelia.
Did you know that vegan comes from the Latin word for bad hunter? Vegans!
Amelia, you need to stop, okay? Look, veganism is... just eat this.
Ah, vegan food. Oh, no. Oh, I've botched it. Vegan food is good.
Meet the V8 Vegan. Crumbed pumpkin, carrot, chickpea and ginger bites joined by vegan provolone cheese. Miso pea mash and their very own Burgerfuel custom crafted vegan aioli. Vegolicious. For more information, go to burgerfuel.com.
Build the internet. Hack your career. Design your future. Become a junior web developer in just 9 weeks with Inspiral Dev Academy's full immersion bootcamp. Next intake is now open. Go to devacademy.co.nz.
We're now returning to this day in history. When we left off, the United States was steadfast in their support for President Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines, despite a growing reputation for corruption and brutality, such as his contentious declaration of martial law in 1972, or his alleged role in the assassination of a critic of his government, Benigno Aquino, in 1983.
We cannot succeed without the support of our people. I am happy to see that the reaction throughout the country is favorable. I have received hundreds and hundreds of telegrams from all corners of the Philippines congratulating you, and incidentally me, for the proclamation of martial law, for the sudden cessation of anarchy and of criminality throughout the land, and of the re-establishment of an atmosphere of brotherhood amongst Filipinos. Now everybody seems concerned about his neighbor. Now everybody seems to be involved in the destiny, not only of himself, but of the entire country and of the entire nation. And this is what we have been hoping and praying for.
I have to suffer with my people. I have to lead them because of the responsibility given to me by our people.
Benigno Aquino, Philippine opposition leader, killed by an assassin's bullet minutes after his arrival at Manila Airport. This is ABC News Nightline. Reporting from Washington for the vacationing Ted Koppel, Sam Donaldson. Manila's police chief said tonight that authorities have still not identified the man who assassinated Benigno Aquino. Authorities said the alleged assassin was shot and killed by security guards at the airport. Jim Laurie, who was aboard the plane that flew Aquino from Taiwan to Manila yesterday, reports from Manila on reaction to his death.
A day after the shooting, thousands of people filed through the home of Aquino. The family ordered the coffin left open, his wounds and blood-stained clothing unaltered. But by and large, most Filipinos did not demonstrate great emotion over the death of Aquino. Since 1972, he had been a distant figure, either in jail or in exile in America. But among the opposition in the Philippines, there was anger and bitterness. They had lost a leader. An Aquino supporter, Salvador Laurel, complained there were too many unanswered questions about the shooting. First, there was still confusion over exactly how the shooting happened. The conflicts between accounts of the shooting will probably never be resolved. But the larger question concerns the motives of the assassin and those who may have supported him, and what all this may mean for the future of the Philippines. Worried about just those questions, the Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos, Aquino's strongest foe, went on television, flanked by his wife and his entire cabinet. Marcos said that no one regretted the shooting more than he did. The answer to who stood to gain the most from killing Aquino may lie with Aquino himself. In several interviews in the hours before his death, Aquino said he expected an attempt on his life.
As long as I'm 10,000 miles away,
Jim Laurie for Nightline in Manila.
That correspondent Laurie report was transmitted to the United States several hours ago. We promised you at the beginning of this broadcast that we would have an interview with Ken Kashiwahara, ABC News correspondent who was Aquino's brother-in-law and who accompanied Aquino to Manila. But we're unable to do that. The television facility in Manila, which is controlled by the Philippine government, will not allow us permission to transmit that interview with Kashiwahara.
The widow of Benigno, Corazon Aquino, would take his place as a strident critic of the Marcos government and become the figurehead of the People Power Revolution in 1986.
This
This Week with David Brinkley. Now, from our Washington headquarters, here's David Brinkley.
It's all changing by the minute, but from our open line to the Philippines, here's what is happening now. There is a mutiny, military and civilian, against President Marcos. The defense minister of the Philippines and the second in command of the army are holed up in a fort surrounded by friendly troops demanding that Marcos resign. The fort is surrounded by civilians also, including women, Catholic priests, nuns, supporting the mutiny. Marcos talks of attacking the fort with artillery, but it is said some of his military units refuse to take orders from him.
The standoff between rebellious military elements and Marcos loyalists began Saturday as helicopters supporting members of the so-called military reform movement ferried in weapons to the camp housing the nation's defense ministry. The defense minister, Juan Ponce Enrile, and the deputy chief of staff, General Fidel Ramos, leading the reformists, had decided on mutiny against President Marcos.
I call upon now everyone who is imbued with a sense of justice and respect for the law to disobey the orders given to them.
The two, both longtime friends and Marcos supporters, both accused the president of cheating Corazon Aquino out of victory in the elections 2 weeks ago. The mandate of the people, they said, rightfully belonged to Aquino. Angered by the rebellion, Marcos took to television.
They were part of an aborted coup d'etat, an assassination plot against the president and the first lady.
With that, Marcos threatened to bring the mutiny to an early end, but for the first 20 hours at least, did nothing. By dawn today, popular support for the military rebellion had grown large. The rebel leaders praying at impromptu morning masses. General Ramos holding out at one military camp, calling for support from units from around the country. And Minister Enrile commandeering the complex housing the Ministry of Defense. By midday, still awaiting a move by Marcos, the two altered their strategy. Enrile, brandishing a small Uzi machine gun, abandoned his base at the Ministry of Defense and marched to join Ramos at Camp Crame, the compound across the street. Enrile, protected both by hundreds of armed men and the goodwill of Roman Catholic sisters. The defense minister reaching the main street, greeted by tens of thousands of cheering supporters. Their chants of Cory, Cory for Aquino turning to chants of Johnny, Johnny, the nickname of the defense chief. And the military, as Enrile quipped, for the first time was earning popular love, not hate. Reunited with a buoyant General Ramos, the two vowed they would not surrender. They would hold out until Marcos resigned.
So a dramatic move to Camp Crame came, as Enrile put it, to consolidate their forces. From here, Ramos and Enrile continue their rebellion, uncertain what an unyielding President Marcos would do next.
And Marcos went on television for the third time in 24 hours, calling on the rebels to surrender. While acting with restraint, he warned what he could do. Enrile later met that threat with one of his own.
We will not fire the first shot, but the moment they fire the first shot, we will be engaged.
Finally, Marcos made his first move. A column of loyal Marines moved up the highway to Camp Crame. But the trucks and armored personnel carriers were met with an amazing display of what General Ramos called people power.
Let us pass. We are just told to go to JHQ.
Urged to show their solidarity with Ramos and Enrile by the Roman Catholic Cardinal here, Jaime Sin, they halted the convoy at first with prayer.
Thank you, Jesus. Touch the heart of every soldier, Lord.
And later with sit-ins, trucks, and buses blocking the way. The new military confrontation here appeared to dwarf the continuing efforts of Corazon Aquino to bring down the Marcos government. While the drama in Manila was unfolding, Aquino was in the southern city of Cebu, continuing a post-election campaign advocating civil disobedience. Today, returning to Manila, and before going into seclusion out of a concern for safety, Aquino made yet another plea.
For the sake of the Filipino people, I ask Mr. Marcos to step down now so that we can have a peaceful transition of government.
Yet faced with the mounting pressure from Aquino, foreign powers, the church, and now military rebellion, Marcos still seemed unyielding. But for now, Marcos was in search of an effective way to deal with a popularly backed military rebellion. As the day ended, his forces in their first appearance on the streets were turned back, the tanks returning to base, the people cheering them on with the slogans and victory signs of Aquino echoing behind them.
Marcos is king! Marcos is king!
Jim Lawrie, ABC News, Manila.
That was news coverage of the People Power Revolution, which began in the Philippines on this day in history, February the 22nd, 1986.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.